Our Hearts, Our Hands Are Empty. Written by Ejlantir. Narrated by Rhea 314. Fandom, Nirvana and Fire. Rating general audiences, creator chose not to use archive warnings. Relationship. Lin Xu, aka Mei Changsu, aka Suzhe, / Xiao Jingyan. The summons from the capital came earlier than expected. Xiao Jingyan had long ago decided to make an intentional effort not to pay attention to the underground streams of court politics. But even so, he knew the pattern of his service by heart. For the last 12 years, His Majesty didn't like him to be present in the capital, for obvious reasons. But he also did not like his generals out of his sight for too long, so Jingyan would be summoned back every 2 years or so to be scolded by father, mocked subtly by fifth brother, or not so subtly by the crown prince, and then summarily dismissed back to his work. If he was lucky, he would get a chance to see his mother once or twice. If not, he'd let his soldiers spend their wages on the dubious comfort of the capital's brothels and restaurants. He'd go and knock some sense into the ever-dishonest army supplies administrators, and then he'd return to the borders with a sigh of relief. Each time, the air of Jinling seemed stiffer to him, and the faces of the peasants and the merchants on the streets became thinner and tenser, his mother's hands paler. And every time, he made himself ride past the gaping gates of the Lin Manor, letting his bitter shame and grief whisper through his veins, storing it up. Perhaps in punishment, perhaps because it was the last thread he had left, the last thin thread connecting him to... no matter. The summons came early. It had been barely half a year since he'd left Jinling. And while the stretch of the border he'd been guarding was quiet, the quiet out there was always deceptive. Even as he knelt down to listen to the travel-harried eunuch deliver father's words, he frantically cast his mind over the past months. But he could find neither outstanding mistakes nor outstanding achievements that could have turned the capital's gaze towards him and his people. He might have paid no attention to the courtly schemes, but he knew, ever since eldest brother, what a single misstep could cost the officers and soldiers under his command. He was always careful in his actions, even if he couldn't always manage to be careful in his words. Then a thought came to him, unbidden and whip-sharp. Mother. If she was sick, even His Majesty wouldn't begrudge her a request of seeing her only son. If she was. He scolded himself for this unlucky thought, even as he gave orders, as he gathered Liu Zhanying and a handful of other officers to him, even as he selected a small escort to go with them. But when they left their camp, the pace he set was narrowly shy of killing the horses. The game of choice on arrival was familiar and soothing in its predictability. He could go to his manor to change before reporting to the Imperial Palace, or he could report immediately without taking off his mud-splattered armor. Either way, he'd get scolded for disrespecting His Majesty, and the only unpredictable aspect would be who of his older brothers would claim the umbrage. He tended to put the comfort of his people over the urgency of reporting, accepting his licks for it. But this time, that was out of the question. Jingyan barely checked himself from galloping straight through the city, remembering at the last moment that the sight of a border general thundering to the palace might cause panic. But at the palace, the expected hours of waiting and stewing in the courtyard never came. Instead, a eunuch invited him into father's audience chambers practically as soon as he arrived. And maybe it was Jingyan's imagination, but the eunuch's smile and bow were a touch more obsequious than perfunctory. He knelt to his father, his heart hammering heavily in his chest. Nobody wore the rough clothes of mourning, but his mother was just a concubine of insignificant rank, and father never cared to... "Rise, rise," His Imperial Majesty said, practically amiable. "You really hurried here, didn't you? Did you ride all the way straight from the border?" He sure smells like he did. The Crown Prince tittered, which was reassuringly normal. But then the fifth brother spoiled this normalcy by not joining in.
Your Majesty,
Dingyan said, straightening, feeling his muscles begin to ache from the carved mask of his court face.
You called. So your servant came as soon as possible.
He gave his report memorandum to the bowing eunuch and took his first look at the dais. His brothers seemed the same as usual, but father looked to be in an unusually good mood, as if he was holding in a joke that everybody would soon be obliged to laugh at.
Very good, father said. Very filial, very good. Your mother raised you well, huh?
Jingyan clenched his fists behind his back. Fifth brother's face was sour, the crown prince's openly angry. Something had happened, and he didn't understand.
Mother always has your majesty's will foremost in her heart,
Jingyan said cautiously, the flowery words clinging to his teeth.
If this servant may ask.
His majesty waved an airy hand at him.
No, he said. Let it be a surprise. Let her tell you. Go see your mother, Jingyan. See what she wants from you.
All the tension left Jingyan's calves and shoulders and back in a rush. For a terrifying moment, he almost swayed on his feet.
This son thanks, father,
he said, with feeling this time, knelt and left as fast as humanly possible without offending the protocol. Outside, the same smiling eunuch appeared before him, while he signaled, all is well, and stand down, to Liye Zhanying. They hurried towards his mother's palace. His Majesty bestowed the Wisteria Palace onto Consort Ding and chose to promote her. The eunuch murmured, please follow me, your highness. Jingyan went after him, keeping his questions firmly behind his teeth. When? How? It was an unspoken truth between him and his mother. To survive, they must both neither attract father's ire nor father's favor, and his mother was a master of staying unseen. What happened? The Wisteria Palace was built relatively recently and didn't really suit his mother. A bit too opulent, too overcrowded with wall hangings and carved cabinets and tables with legs fashioned into leaping lions. Among the maids bustling through its corridors, at least half the faces were unfamiliar to him, and he made note to guard his tongue carefully. His mother sat behind the low tea table, and at least her robes were of familiar plain make, soothing in their white and blue predictability. Jingyan searched her face, even as he knelt before her, looking frantically for any signs of a wasting disease. But she was as calm, as pale, and as serene as usual, and her hands didn't betray any tremor, didn't seem any thinner. At the sight of him, she flowed into an infinitely familiar, beloved smile, and he smiled back, relieved. Jingyan, she said warmly, oh, it's good to see you. How quickly you got here. For no reason at all, this phrase and how exactly it mirrored father's made him uneasy.
I will always hurry back home, he said,
and hoped that she knew that by home he meant you and nothing else.
But father said you had a surprise for me.
I, she said and paused. Yes. Of course, His Majesty told you. But should we not... First, you're so thin again. Let me feed you first. I had the cooks make all your favorite dishes as soon as I knew you were in the palace, and I wanted... For her, it was almost flustered.
Mother, Jingyan said, and reached to take her hand. Whatever it is, please tell me first. You know I will do anything you want.
She swallowed, straightened, swallowed again. Jingyan's stomach cramped into almost battlefield fear at how visible and obvious her discomfiture was. And then his mother said, I have found you a wife, Jingyan.
and His Majesty has approved your marriage already." Qing Yan gaped at her in a way that would have earned him at least a week of kneeling in the yard from father.
"What?"
Consort Jing, unbelievably, lowered her eyes before him. "Her name is Miss May, and she's accomplished in the four arts. Good family. She's 18, but she's smart. Her..."
"What?"
Jing Yan said, inside this time, unable to make his mother lose face before the undoubtedly eavesdropping maid. A girl of 18? He understood now the crown prince's sneering.
"I'm sorry, mother," he said with numb lips. "I was just surprised. Surely there's no urgency. And of course you chose well, but don't you think the borders might be unsuitable for such a young lady?"
His mother's lips twisted. "Indeed," she said quietly. "You're to remain in the capital with your wife after the marriage." The pause lengthened, twisted. This meant leaving the scarce freedom and solace of his duty, of clean, useful fighting. Father, the emperor, would never suffer a general prince in his vicinity, which meant his career would be effectively over, which meant that his army would be disbanded, his people split between others. And, of course, his mother knew, had to know, that it was one thing for him to stay prudent and silent on his rare and fleeting visits, when he both knew that raising the old questions would cost them both their lives, and that he'd be free again soon. Living in the capital, day in and day out, under the scornful eyes of his brothers, under father's ever-suspicious scrutiny, how soon would his head, along with his unlucky bride's, roll? He stared at his steepled fingers, stalling, unable to ask the thousand of questions boiling on his tongue. Was it his mother's idea? Was it father's? What did those changes, the palace, the maids, the consort title, mean?
"Qing Yan," his mother said quietly, "Miss May is the daughter of my old, old friend. He is now dead, but I owe the family a great debt. It was his wish that she'd live her days out in the capital and see the imperial palace. Marry her. Do as she asks you."
"Live her days out."
He was startled to hear his own voice, wooden, dutiful, the same voice he used for his palace reports. Still, her choice of words niggled at him.
"She's sick," his mother said. "She won't be a burden for too long. Jing Yan, my son."
Jing Yan raised his eyes to her and saw that tears were tracing paths down her face. He dropped his cup on the carpet, scrambled around the table to kneel by her side and seized her hands.
"Mother," he said urgently. "Mother, forgive your unfilial son. Of course, I was stupid. Of course I'll marry whoever you want. Please don't."
Her smile for him was watery, wavering. For a moment he saw her not as he always did, not the steadfast, calm rock among the turbulent stream, but an aging, exhausted woman with nobody to turn to.
"Mother," he said again, "I'm sorry. It's just that I never heard about... Did you ever tell me about this friend?"
Consort Jing wiped her face with an almost compulsive movement. At her signal, a maid slipped noiselessly into the room, bringing her a bowl of fragrant water to wash her hands. Another picked up Jing Yan's dropped cup and replaced it. Jing Yan, obeying this unspoken direction, bowed and settled back into his place across from his mother.
"I didn't," Consort Jing said. "Our acquaintance was so long, long ago, before you were even born, before I came to the palace. I thought it was an old story, until it turned out that even old stories can have children."
"What was his name?"
She looked at him, kind and untouchable and serene again. For a sudden, insane moment that he berated himself for later, Qing Yan thought,
My mother is still in her old palace, and I don't know who this woman is. Why am I here?
Mei Shinan, his mother said, and the name meant nothing to Jingyan at all.
He conveyed the news to Zhanying in terse, clipped sentences on their way back. Zhanying, ancestors bless him, nodded as if this complete upturn of their entire lives was par for the course. He promised to gather information on the changes in the capital. Jingyan didn't doubt he would, and soon. Zhanying's excellence at military intelligence always easily parlayed into gathering city gossip and separating truth from rumor. On any other occasion, he might have told Zhanying not to bother. It felt too close to the despised scheming and conspiracies of the capital, to the thing that he would not touch. But when it concerned Mother, he hadn't seen her tears for over a decade. Once free from the heavy and old air of the palace, his mind worked furiously. Was there an old friend? Was there an old debt? Was his mother forced somehow into doing somebody's bidding? Did somebody threaten her, blackmail her? That he would know, and if it turned out to be true, he thought, whoever was behind it would learn to be sorry. To be sorry deeply, but not for long. It was a full week before Liu Zhangying presented his report. A week that Jingyan spent alternately pacing his rooms, training to exhaustion with his men in the courtyard, and writing letters of recommendations for the people under his command whom he didn't dare to leave to whoever would be sent to the borders in his place. A palace eunuch visited to smile at him in an infuriatingly condescending way, and to assure him that he didn't need to worry about either betrothal or wedding gifts, and that His Majesty, in his infinite generosity, was overseeing those matters for him, and that the most auspicious wedding date would be decided soon. Jingyan gritted his teeth and expressed his filial gratitude as graciously as he could. He would have given his left hand to be able to see Mother again, this time alone with nobody to overhear them. What he got instead was Liu Zhangying, his face troubled and apologetic. It turned out that the population of Jinling, which usually thrived on gossip, even about things most sacred, was preternaturally reticent on the matter of Jingyan's intended. Nobody seemed to know anything, or at least claimed to not know anything, and, a miracle, not even the coins Zhangying offered cured them of this ignorance. There were only two reliable bits of information, one of them mundane and the other astonishing. Miss May, whoever she was, arrived in Jinling a year ago with a modest household and guard, but no parents or siblings to accompany her. And not 2 months after, she was adopted as a daughter by Marquis Yan.
Nonsense, Jingyan said, unable to stop himself.
Even he knew how little time the Marquis had for the world, including his own son and heir. Him officially adopting a no-name maiden from the outskirts of the Empire was out of the question. Zhanying apologetically shrugged his shoulders. It's true. She hasn't been out since, but she's written into the Yan family books, and the young Master Yan claims her as a sister. This would explain the marriage, at least, because... He trailed off, but Jingyan finished it for him.
Because even my mother wouldn't be able to persuade His Majesty to approve otherwise, even when it's about me.
Lady Jing, Zhanying said quietly, became Consort Jing and was given many gifts and honors from His Majesty ever since 6 months ago. He didn't disclose whether there was any gossip flying around the city about that, probably wisely. But the time was there. A girl, a mere chit, came from nowhere, and in a year claimed two unmovable figures, Marquis Yan and Jingyan's own mother, as her own allies.
Get my horse ready, Jingyan said. I'm going to pay my future father-in-law a visit.
The short ride to the Yan mansion
was just enough to make Jing Yan's slowly mounting rage reach its apex, and his plan, such as it was, amounted to demanding a frank conversation, and explanations, from the Marquis, and not leaving until he was given the truth. But he was met at the gates by Yan Yujin, and no amount of fury, righteous or not, could withstand the power of Yujin's guileless good cheer. That was something that Jing Yan, who knew Yujin since he was a little boy in skirts, knew intimately. Only Lin Xu could withstand it. The familiar pain settled over him at this thought, stealing his momentum, and by the time he forcefully shoved it back, he was already seated with a cup of tea in his hand, and Yujin, waving his hands, was saying, "I know you'd like to see Father, but you know how he is, right? I know. He should have sent his personal thanks for the groom gifts, and he will, absolutely. But right now he's in the monastery again, and I wish I could tell you when he's coming back, but..." Jing Yan downed his cup and gently put it on the table. "Yujin," he said, "can I meet your sister?" For a moment, he thought he had it. Yan Yujin had always impeccably known what the right formalities were, and so could waive them with impunity when he thought he should. And he loved introducing people to each other, because he always thought everybody would naturally like each other. Because everybody naturally liked Yan Yujin, Jing Yan somehow to his chagrin included. If he could not get his answers out of Marquis Yan, he'd get them out of his mysterious bride, manners be damned. But Yujin's face grew serious, and he shook his head. "She's unwell today," apologetically. "And, you know, it's very important to her father, to her birth father, I mean, that everything gets done just right, just by the book. So she wouldn't like to see you before the wedding. Sorry, Your Highness." Jing Yan imagined fist-fighting Yujin and the rest of Marquis Yan's frugal household to invade a sick maiden's bedroom, and sighed. "I understand," he said. "It's just been a surprise to me." I know. Apparently, Mei Shinan and my father go way back, and they made an agreement that whoever dies first, the other will take their children in. Yujin made a face. "Honestly, I'm happy that sister came to us and not the other way around. She had to come all the way from Dadong, can you imagine that? I don't think they have good music houses there." He sighed. "Sister Changsu is really amazing, though. It's a pity you're stealing her from us so soon. You're going to be one of those husbands who keeps their wives from seeing their family, won't you? I'll miss her." The weirdest thing about Yujin, Jing Yan thought, and likely the reason the entire town, with its thousands of scheming factions, liked him, was that he was absolutely sincere. "Of course not," he said. "Give your family my regards, will you? I guess I'll see you on the wedding day." Then he had a horrifying thought, and leaned towards Yujin, putting on his most serious expression. "But Yujin," he said, "no gate-crashing games, do you hear me? I won't be in the mood, and I don't think we should keep your sister waiting." Yujin laughed and held out placating hands. "I wasn't dreaming of it. Oh, of course I was, but you're right, I promise. No games." Miss May didn't appear in public even once, and the elusive Marquis Yan didn't return from his monastery, and no summons came from either Jing Yan's mother or his father. All that was left was to fret, to train, and to prepare his house for the wedding feast. Or rather, he submitted to the palace staff preparing his house for the wedding feast. The only act of rebellion he allowed himself was locking his personal study and putting his most trusted people to guard it. He let it be known that he'd personally deal with any trespassers, and then did his best to ignore carts of furniture and hangings and who knows what constantly loitering at his back gates. The only important thing was to not let anybody touch Lin Xu's bow with their impure hands. The rest did not matter. He slept similarly poorly on a thin army bedroll as he did on finest silk. Some lower officials sent their regards and invitations, likely banking on riding the change of his fortunes. Jing Yan told the servants he's not at home to any of them, and gave the gifts away to the city poor. His older brother sent mocking felicitations. The only sincere, he thought, one came from third brother, sweet in its complete innocence of whatever undercurrents there were. Mother sent him his favorite sweets once, and Jing Yan, feeling ridiculous and faintly ashamed of himself, took the lacquer box they came in apart, looking for a note, or a scratch, or a hint, or something. But the box was silent and empty, and the sweets tasted bitter on his tongue. Finally, the auspicious day, the date of which was, in Jing Yan's opinion, suspiciously too close, came, and there was nothing to do but dress in his stiff red clothes, to mount his horse, and to go, along with Zhan Ying and a handful of other trusted lieutenants, towards his fate. The palace sent the musicians along. He wondered if that was mother's or father's doing, but no lucky child ran ahead of his horse, somehow, to Jing Yan's relief. He didn't think there were many children in his future, and he was relieved to know it. The gates of the Yan mansion stood open, and, coming in, Jing Yan saw the bright red sedan of the bride, and beaming Yan Yujin next to it. Marquis Yan stood next to him, with his old cunning face as stony and unreadable as ever. The women in the crowd of attendants were unfamiliar. At least this whirlwind of madness did not pull the Empress in. Jing Yan tensed, going through the gates, but Yujin kept his word and nobody stopped him. He dismounted and bowed to his hosts over his clasped hands. "Welcome, Your Highness," the old Marquis murmured. "What brings you here today?" "Honored Elder, I came for my bride," Jing Yan said. Most of his adult life was lived under the precept that, once one accepted to do something, one had to do it properly.
"Is she ready to come home?"
A servant came up to them, bearing a lacquered tray with a traditional tea. Jing Yan took his cup and downed it, managing not to wince at the taste, and almost coughed it back up when the Marquis said, quietly, not for the public ears, and with the piercing intensity that must have served him well in the days of his illustrious youth,
"Can we trust you with her, Your Highness? Can you promise to take good care of this daughter of mine?"
The entirety of a lifetime of lessons in respect for his elders, along with some tattered remains of battlefield strategy, stopped Jing Yan from trying to shake some information out of the old man by the front of his robes. But instead he bowed again and said,
"Don't doubt it, honored father-in-law. I look forward to visiting you with my wife in the future."
Marquis Yan studied him some more, then gave an imperceptible nod of his head and stepped away. The doors to the main house opened, and Jing Yan got his first glimpse of his bride, or rather of her red clothes in the shadow of her bridal veil over her face. An attendant was holding a rice sieve over her head, shielding her from the sun, as she slowly, carefully went down the first step. She leaned on the hand of her maid, a sturdy girl of about 13, who had the slightly unfocused eyes of a person not quite all the way there. He saw them sometimes on his campaigns, children who saw too much too young and decided to stop seeing the whole world altogether. Jing Yan tensed a bit, wondering if this was any sort of an insult, but nobody batted an eye. The Marquis's servants and attendants looked at the pair with indulgent affection and cheer. Jing Yan filed this away to ask about later. At the bottom of the steps, Yan Yujin relieved the maid of her burden and swung his sister up into his arms. He whispered something into her ear, and Jing Yan heard for the first time her laugh, low and husky. He shivered and couldn't say why. Yan Yujin carried her to the sedan without faltering once and handed her in. The firecrackers went off, deafening and bright, and the musicians tried to match them in volume. The little maid climbed into the second sedan, The stable hands brought into the yard carts piled with the lady's dowry, and as Jingyan mounted his horse, an old man in physician's robes came up to his reins. Jingyan nodded at him, allowing him to speak.
"Your Highness," the old man said. "My name is Physician Yan, and I've been looking after the young miss since her childhood. May I come in from time to time to check up on her? Her condition is delicate."
"Of course," Jingyan said, frowning. "What do I need to know about it?"
The old physician coughed. "Young miss will tell you all you need to know," he said. "But in case she would find this particular topic too sensitive."
He lowered his voice and stroked his beard, and Jingyan leaned down to him, annoyed and intrigued at the same time.
"Let it just be said that due to the nature of the young Mrs. Yin's state, it would be better to, defer to her when it comes to scheduling the marital activities."
Having said this piece, he bowed and walked away, leaving Jingyan in a state of bemused annoyance. Was he marrying a woman, if frail and mysterious, or was he marrying some kind of nine-tailed fox? What was Mother thinking? No matter. He spurred his horse and led the procession home. The red carpet running from the gates to the entrance of his house was to be expected, as was the row of his soldiers in their best parade armor, led by a smiling Liu Zhangying waiting on the left side of the carpet. What he did not expect was the row of palace guards on the right. Mengzhi saluted him and, perplexingly, winked at him, and the bright robes of the palace maids half hidden behind them. Jingyan's heart beat hollow and heavy. He dismounted and waited for the little maid to help her mistress out. The bride's three first steps were sure and steady, her head high, and then she almost stumbled over the saddle on the ground and swayed on her feet. For the first time since Mother's bewildering orders, Jingyan let the grievance of his own upended life fade away, and he felt a bolt of unbidden sympathy for the girl. Was she, too, simply following the incomprehensible wishes of her elders? Was it easy for her to walk this endless carpet on her unsteady feet, under the watchful eyes of her future unloving household? He stepped forward and offered his hand.
"Walk with me, my lady."
He couldn't see her face from under the veil, but she did let go of the maid's hand, who had given Jingyan an unmistakably rude evil eye, making him feel curiously ashamed, and leaned on his arm instead. Even through the stiff layers of brocade, her body was shockingly cold.
"Thank you, Your Highness," she said, in the same husky, strangely adult voice.
"Let's go," he said. "Just a little more ceremony left, and then you can rest before the banquet." She nodded. They walked together, their locked ceremonial step just slow enough to let her place her feet with care. The soldiers beat their plated hands against their chest pieces, the maids cheered, the fireworks cracked, and the resulting din ate at any other words they might have said to each other. Within the mansion, by the family altar, impossibly, Jingyan's mother waited in bright clothes, smiling with sly bodhisattva joy. Jingyan, shocked, almost knelt to her first before catching himself at the sight of Eunuch Gao, with the official scroll of office. "His Imperial Majesty," the eunuch said, loud like any trumpet, "wishes long life and prosperity to his beloved seventh son and his wife, and bestows the honor of being allowed to visit the Imperial Palace and Consort Jing at any time they wish." Jingyan swallowed and sank into the kowtow, pulling his bride down with him. For the first time in many, many years, he felt a surge of real gratitude to his father.
We hear and obey,
they said in unison.
"Welcome, children," his mother said gently. "You make my heart glad."
The rest of the ceremony passed in the blur. Later, he remembered only the hands, the chilling cold of Mei Cheng Su's fingers, the insubstantial warmth of his mother's palm on his head, his wife's trembling hands as she reverently offered a cup of ceremonial tea to Consort Jing, his own fingers, alien and wooden, on the floor as he kowtowed to her, sealing their fate. The marriage bed was new to him. It dwarfed his quarters, making them feel alien and small. And it dwarfed his bride, his wife, when he carefully set her down. He heard her sigh when he did it, and was struck by how familiar this sigh was, more suitable for the field medic tent than the opulence of a wedding night. Relief from carefully endured pain, another sound too heavy for her years. He knelt before her and said consciously gently,
"It's all done now. You did well. May I help you with your clothes?"
From above, she nodded without demurral. He slid her shoes off her feet, trying to touch her both with kindness and as little as possible, her physician's warning now sounding more reasonable to him, and rose to remove her veil. They stared at each other in silence, broken only by the crackling of the candles. Her face was very pale, laid out in strong, clean lines that reminded him of Princess Nihuang for some reason. Not a warrior face, considering the translucent fragility of her skin, but her eyes, he thought. Her gaze. She was staring at him with neither the modest trepidation of a gentle virgin nor the simple lust of an experienced older woman. She was staring at him as if she wanted to devour him, as if she'd spent years wandering in the desert and he was an oasis. Her eyes were pale and clear gray, and they were much, much too old for her face, and they burned. Jing Yan sat back on his heels and let his palms lay open on his knees.
"Madam," he said simply, "why are you here?"
"My father," she said and stopped. "My father," she said again, "wanted to see me wedded to the man sitting on the dragon throne before I die." Jing Yan barked out a disbelieving laugh.
"Was your honored late ancestor blind, then? If you wanted to be the empress, you should have chosen a different prince. Or are you planning to use me to climb into a better wedding chamber?"
She didn't flinch from him and didn't smile. "My father," she said again, heavily, simply, "knew the only prince worthy of his loyalty, and this man is now dead. He thought it's up to the younger ones to right the wrongs against their elders." If she'd reached out and slapped him, he'd be less shocked. Jing Yan stumbled to his feet and turned away from her, unable to control his face, then whirled back.
"Woman," he said, leaning down to her, hearing his own voice, low, guttural, a groan of the wounded buffalo rather than a human being. "Think carefully of what you say. Who told you to tell this to me? Who taught you?"
She rose to her feet and stood facing him. The color was rising in her cheeks, blood beating under the thin skin. "Think, my prince, think," she said, mocking. "Are you content to sit and wait for the country your honored brother loved as his own heart to fall into dust? Who would you see on the throne once your father leaves it? The one who has no brain and no heart of his own, or the one who wants to be an emperor only so he can finally hold power in his hands, or the rest of them? Will you skulk back to your borders and wait until they grind this place to dust? Are you content, Xiao Jingyan? Are you happy, my dear husband?" For a moment, unreality gripped him again. For an insane, bewildering moment, behind her husky, lilting tone, he heard another voice, infinitely beloved, dead those 12 years. Hao Linshu would mock him for what he deemed his buffalo obstinacy, his unwillingness to take matters in his own hand, how... He sat down, unwilling to look in her blazing eyes anymore.
"You're 18, he said quietly. "How can you even understand what you're talking about? You were 6 when my brother died."
He ran his palm forcibly down his face, wiping away the unbidden grief.
"If you were sent to implicate me, to make my father think of me as unfilial, I do not care. Either he knows his son or he doesn't. But you got my mother mixed up in this. How did you do it, you little viper?
Now he was on steadier ground.
Marquis Yen can take care of himself, and the rest of the capital may burn themselves for all I care. But if a hair falls from my mother's head, if you tricked her, if you implicated her, I'll be a widower tonight.
Mei Tengsu knelt by his feet, jerkily, ungracefully, a wilted flower in festive red.
I can't tell you everything, Your Highness, she said quietly. But on the graves of my ancestors, I swear that I treasure Lady Jing as if I was a child of her body and that I won't let any harm come to her for as long as I draw breath.
And for no reason he could discern, Jing Yan believed her. They ended up sitting cross-legged against each other on their ridiculous wedding bed, both having shed the cicada cocoons of their red clothes, with only a plate of pastry separating them. Mei Tengsu picked one and nibbled on it with indifference. Jing Yan ate three just to do something with his hands.
"What will I find?" he asked. "If I send my second-in-command to your hometown, and ask around about the late Mei Shenan and his daughter."
"If he is really thorough? An empty house and a grave marker."
"And if he is more thorough than that?"
"I'd rather," Mei Tengsu said, with certain dignity, "not lie to you outright, husband. But even your Liye Zhangying can't be thorough enough. Let's put it like that." Jing Yan remembered his throwaway thought about a demon fox and twitched his shoulders. And then, since his wedding night was already more insane than it had any right to be, he asked anyway.
"Are you human?"
She dropped her gaze to her hands and was silent for a long moment.
"As human as you," she said finally. "As human as anybody who grieves is."
Jing Yan stared at her, and then saw that she was shivering in small, hidden tremors, the skin on her thin arms covered in goosebumps.
"Are you afraid of me?"
"Just cold. My body gets cold really easily."
This was the first moment he saw her to be truly uncomfortable, almost ashamed of herself, and it brought a corresponding shame in him.
"I won't spare you if you harm my mother," he said. "And I still don't understand any of it. But no person in my house will suffer needlessly, be it cold, or pain, or hunger."
Then he felt ridiculously pompous, and then just ridiculous. He climbed off the bed and lit all the braziers in the room, and found a heavy winter blanket to put around her shoulders. She watched him from under her dark lashes, thoughtful and silent.
"All right," he said, returning to his place across from her.
The air was growing uncomfortably warm fast, and under the heavy blanket she looked like a child huddling on her mother's bed. If not for those eyes. But at least he felt less as if he'd stumbled and fell into a fey dream.
"All right. You want to be wed to an emperor. But if you know anything about the capital, you have to know how unlikely I'm to become my father's heir. He barely tolerates the sight of me." "And I," he added quietly, "will not be a tool for any unrest. If that's what those who sent you want, they will be disappointed. I will not be a
kinslayer?"
his wife asked, the twist of her lips ironic. Even with everything else, it still shocked him to hear her say it. Say something that he never dared to even think about, not even in those horrible first days and nights after the death of his previous life. So casually. Who was she?
"You wouldn't have been the first emperor of this dynasty to take the throne by force," she said. "But no, I don't offer that to you. You would have power if you could take it, but you don't want power, do you? What you want is justice."
"Justice,"
he whispered almost to himself. "Do you think," she asked, that honored eldest brother intended to be a kinslayer, that he coveted the throne.
The father doesn't know the son, and the son doesn't know the father.
No,
Jingyan said, barely breathing.
Not him. Never.
What would you give to be able to clean his name? To hear his exoneration from His Majesty's lips? To be able to put up a memorial tablet for him, for the people who died with him? To have him cleared not by your imperial decree that people will gossip about, but by your father's own word? What would it mean to you?
Everything.
Then he shook his head, dispelling the illusion.
Listen to me. Do you think I didn't try? I tried to plead with Father when you were a babe in your mother's arms, and I tried until I was to leave the capital or lose my head, and even then I wouldn't have stopped if it didn't mean my mother's head also. Right or wrong, with evidence or not, Father will never change his decision, not in this life.
It's true, Mei Changsu said, that your father won't listen to his unfavored son. Look at you. He'll throw you away on a girl who's almost nameless to satisfy his consort's whim. He won't listen to you if you brought Confucius himself to support your words. Jingyan winced, grateful that his long acquaintance with the esteemed Xiaodong and Nihuang herself had inured him to listening to cutting rudeness from women without flying into a rage.
How should I become favored then, O wise one? Should my mother fawn and simper around the emperor the way noble consort Yue does? Should I squeeze the provinces for wealth and influence like my fifth brother? Should I perhaps go hunting for a magical talent in the Jianghu, the scheming viper so wise he would poison all the obstacles in my path?
Husband, husband, Mei Changsu said, now bizarrely fond. As if they've been married for eons. As if they were quarreling over some small vice of his every morning of their life like two old peasants. You should begin by listening when you want to talk, and talking when you want to shout. She raised her hand, forestalling him. Let us be serious now. You have no support in the capital, no allies, no wealth, no proper shadow. Everybody who would have supported you 12 years ago is now dead, accused, sentenced, or scattered to the wind. You don't have money for bribes, and you wouldn't know who to bribe, and you don't want to get your hands dirty. Even if you wanted to find the truth behind Prince Qi's murder, you wouldn't know where to start. Each word was like a slap, yet the bizarre fondness remained, and Jingyan, instead of freezing into familiar wounded disdain, found himself leaning towards her, smiling.
What do I have, then?
Mei Changsu started pulling out one fish-shaped pastry after another on the red coverlet. Your mother, who did not fawn or simper at your father to make him promote her from mere concubine to consort, she chose to hide and live her life in peace in those years, for your sake, and she chooses differently now. You shouldn't underestimate your mother, my filial husband. Yourself. For you are honest and straightforward and clean. Your people love you. Your brothers and the emperor will dismiss you as long as they think you know your place. And many people in the capital are tired of the war between the princes and wouldn't mind following somebody with a clean conscience. Your brothers choose loyal and greedy for their factions. And so the city is full of talent with nobody to be truly loyal to. Show that you'll value integrity and work over favoritism, and they'll flock to you. And, she said, and smiled at him. They were almost nose to nose now, leaning over the fish, making its way forward between them. And there was mischief in his wife's pale eyes, a hectic flush on her high cheekbones. You will have me. And what you'll give me is access to every banquet and every courtyard, to all those wives and mothers and sisters of the capital, and all the secrets they keep, and all the truths they hide. Who do you think knows everything, but never gets listened to? I will listen to them.
What an army we'll make, Jingyan said. And then he thought, why not?
Would it be worse than letting his heart die by degrees out in the steppes, watching the neighbors circle closer and closer to the country his brother and Lin Xu so loved, while his older brother's greed and his father's distrust clawed it into pieces? Could it be worse than the non-life, non-death he sleepwalked through these last 12 lonely years? The idea of fighting the most important battle of his life by his mother's guile, his wife's knowledge of womanly secrets, and his own dubiously virtuous nature was laughable. But has he any better ones? The ceremonial goblets, forgotten by them both, stood by the bed. He took them, feeling sillier and lighter than he had in years, and offered one to Mei Changsu. His fingers tangling clumsily in the connecting red thread. She took his offering without a pause, but her hands were once again trembling so hard the wine splashed on the coverlet between them. Jingyan studied them, frowning, and thought that he'll order the attendants to bring more braziers into every room of the mansion first thing tomorrow.
Friends, then. If I'm to be a prince again, you'll have to be my general, madam.
Mei Changsu made a weird sound, somewhere between a laugh and a sob, choked, and lifted the wine to her lips. Friends, my prince. In this life, or any other. 2 years later. On the night of the emperor's birthday banquet, Jingyan lay unsleeping in their bed, studying his wife's profile in the faint moonlight. She always seemed smaller in her sleep, curled up quiet and motionless under the covers. He listened to the faint wheeze of her breath and let the familiar shame wash over him. He could still see her in his mind, kneeling without an outer robe in their courtyard, looking at him with naked pleading. And he, mad with worry over his mother, had called her an oathbreaker, had cursed her, had turned his back on her. What a fool he had been. He'd spilled so many apologies in the long days after, sitting in despair over her sickbed as she wheezed and coughed and fought for breath. And he had been forgiven. By her, if not by her ferocious maid, for he still found his boots full of freezing water on occasion. And not by his own household, who had been by this time charmed into completely switching their allegiance. But the forgiveness had been like a leaf of rice paper over a crack in a stone wall. Some degree of closeness he hadn't known existed had been lost. They had made a strange pair over those tumultuous 2 years, closer than lovers in the pursuit of vengeance and justice, further apart than friends in their mutual secrets. At night he held her close, staving off the chill living in her bones, but by some mutual assent they hadn't touched each other otherwise, not as a husband and wife would. Not even on the night after Xie Yu's downfall, when they drank themselves into stupor in their bedroom, giggling like hysterical, exhausted children. Nor after the night Xia Jiang fell. Nor even when Jingyan cried, his face buried in her lap, her fingers combing slowly and gently through his hair. She had never told him about her life before their meeting, and he hadn't asked. He had never mentioned Lin Xu's name, never told her why he wouldn't let anybody touch the bow in his study, never shown her the giant pearl still waiting in its coffin. And she had not asked him either. He had never told her that sometimes, in his dreams, her sly smile melded with Lin Xu's blinding grin, that sometimes he reached for Lin Xu's beloved, tanned, calloused swordmaster hands and ended up holding her narrow, freezing palms. That sometimes his familiar nightmares of snow and blood and dirt of Mei Ling had him stumbling around in despair and grief, searching for the glimpse of her gray robes, the furs of her cloak. That sometimes he looked at her, like this at night, a step before their labors came to a close, before they would prevail or lose together, and felt his heart sing with the same impossible joy, impossible longing, that sheltered, naive, despairing Jingyan of so long ago felt for his brightly burning golden friend. He never got the chance to offer Lin Xu his heart, the whole of it. Lin Xu slipped through his fingers, turned into bloody mud and ash. And now, in bed with his wedded wife, his before the gods and the people and the emperor, he felt the same urgency, the same impossibility of asking or receiving. He was, by their joint efforts, by the helping of many allies and friends Jingyan would not have known he had without her, on his way to grant her the wish she told him about, to make her the wife of the man sitting on the dragon throne. And not a day went by when he did not remember the second part of that wish, the truth of her statement. "My father wanted to see me wed to the man sitting on the dragon throne before I die." By now, Physician Yan lived in the mansion full time. From time to time, a mysterious, loud-mouthed, uncouth man with a stance of a martial sect leader would blow in, consult with the old man, insult Jingyan, and strike holy terror into little Feilio, before leaving again, pills and concoctions and powders scattered in his wake. When you asked for reassurance, the physician sighed and stroked his beard and implored Jingyan to do his best to make his wife rest. When asked, the young man would laugh sharply and bitterly and hide behind his fan. His wife would hide her bloody handkerchiefs from him, and smile with bloodless lips, and then go for yet another visit, yet another session of careful gossip and measured promises, for the hunt for those who deserved her anger. She was slipping, slipping, slipping through his fingers, and he, who was a step away from righting the greatest wrong of his life, from setting free the ghosts crowding his shoulders, he who would soon hold the entire Dalian in his hands, he could do nothing. Perhaps it was his destiny to be a coward. Mei Tengsu stirred in her sleep, and then coughed, scattering his thoughts. He leaned to her without thinking, his hands already knowing their job, raise her up, bring a cup of medicine to her trembling lips until her breath would smooth out and she'd lean limp and pliant against his arm. "Shh, shh, my general."
"Jingyan,"
she sighed. Her eyes were half closed, cloudy with sleep, her pale mouth curved around his name as if it was familiar and precious.
"Jingyan."
He leaned down and kissed her. For a blissful moment, she answered him, the bitter tang of medicine on her lips heavenly sweet. Then her eyes snapped open, and she pushed him away with both her hands, flung herself against the carved headboard, panting. Jingyan retreated to his side of the bed, still lightheaded with the enormity of his own daring, reeling, and raised his hands in supplication.
"Madam,"
he said as gently as he could.
"Jingyan,"
she whispered,
"you can't."
He could not stand the fear, real fear, in her eyes. She who'd laughed in Xia Jiang's face. She who stood over Xie Yu in his chains and mocked him until he lunged at her, snarling. She who'd plotted rebellion with Ni Huang. She who'd plucked Ting Sheng from the palace's clutches as neatly and easily as a cook would pluck the seed from a peach. And here, in the quiet of their bedroom, she was terrified.
Of him? For him?
He squeezed his fists.
"Tell me why,"
he said.
"Is the throne truly the only thing you want?"
She shook her head slowly, as if against her will. In the moonlight, free of her court paint, her face was starkly gray, sculpted in long planes of dark and light.
"You told me you're human,"
he said.
"Is it me that you don't want? Is there anybody you want more?"
She shook her head again, pressed her mouth into a thin, stubborn line. He knew then that he had to hurry, had to not let her find her voice, not to let her weave a web of reasonable, clever, indisputable arguments around him.
"You're human," Jingyan said. "You are my wife. You are the one I owe everything to. You are the one I love. Will you not let me kiss you?"
Urgency gripped him, he knew suddenly, in a place beyond human knowing that this was his last chance, the last moment where he could reach out and hold her. He threw back the covers and climbed to his knees, suddenly awkward, desperate, uncaring, and kowtowed to her as deeply as he'd ever kowtowed to any god of his life.
"Mei Tengsu,"
he said into the darkness.
"My general, my friend, my savior. I have not been a good husband to you, but you gave me everything I ever needed. Will you hear me beg? Will you stay with me, my love?"
His heart beat, hollow and heavy, his blood moving with effort through his veins. No night before the battle had been more terrifying in his life. He waited for her judgment and thought, "If now she'd ask me to choose between her and the final step we'll take tomorrow, what would I choose? I do not know, but I do know that she wouldn't, and I love her for this. For this, too." Her hands on his shoulder, pushing, he let her raise him to his knees and stared at her like a man hoping for a stay of execution. Her lips were trembling. Her hair, free of its pins and brooches, fell around her in strands of darkness.
"Jingyan," she said again,
and there was something in her voice that made him shiver.
"My water buffalo. Have you still not learned to not give your heart to people?"
Jingyan froze, unable to not believe what his heart now knew for sure.
12 years ago, his wife said, meditatively now, slightly mocking, a young general named Lin Shu fell off the cliff and broke his legs and back and froze for hours and finally died with hatred and bitterness in his heart and the souls of his father and his soldiers and his mother and his sisters and his prince all gathered around him.
12 years ago, a girl from a peasant family living in a shepherd's hovel near Meiling died. She fell into the water when washing clothes in the river, and the cold made her so numb she sank. And then she opened her eyes again.
I opened her eyes, Jingyan, my dear husband. And the souls I brought with me helped me get to the shore.
Slowly, slowly, Jingyan made his tongue free itself from the roof of his mouth.
And then?
And then this girl, Lin Shu said, this girl whose name I do not know to this day, made her way to Langya Hall, and then she waited and watched and grew up and fell sick more times than she could count, as her innocent body could not contain so much grief. And then, one day, she married a really stubborn prince. Jingyan once saw a grassland burning. From the safe vantage of a rocky plateau, he watched, mesmerized, the way a handful of small fires grew into a roaring wall of heat and light. He felt the same happen inside of him now, the seed of frozen, ancient grief within his heart shattered, and the fire spread through his meridians, burned his hands and feet and lips and chest.
"Lin Shu,"
he whispered, barely able to believe his words.
"Lin Shu."
His love looked back at him and still didn't understand.
"Can you see, Jingyan? I lied to you about being human. But soon my job will be done and you will be free."
Jingyan didn't listen anymore. He jumped out of the bed, tearing down the hanging in his haste, and rushed to his, their shared study, tossing books and teacups and medicine apart, frantically searching until he had the familiar box under his desperate fingers. When he came back, clutching it in his hands, he saw the rarest of all sights.
Lin Shu, Mei Tang Su, out of words for once, watching him with fearful curiosity.
He savored the feeling, for his heart was singing at him, and put the box with a pearl the size of an egg into beloved hands.
"Lin Shu," he said. "Mei Tang Su, my general, my friend, my wife, my brother, my love. I was a coward in your first life, but the heavens are merciful. Man or woman, living or dead, human or ghost, I ask you again, will you stay with me? Will you finally have me, in this life and any other?"
He held his breath. Lin Shu opened the box and stared at the pearl inside as if it was a poisoned flower, a jeweled snake. He was always... Oh, Jingyan thought, finally, finally, gods. He is still as stubborn as ever. And so, instead of waiting, he kissed his wife again, and this time he was not denied. From the archives of Longyear Hall, a private letter. The coronation was lovely, if too ostentatious for my tastes. From the pinched look of the poor emperor, it was too much for him, too. May he not find the crown too heavy in the coming years. But his empress was clearly basking in all the attention, and was resplendent in yellow brocade. It really does suit her coloring. And I am dying to find out which of my hypotheses bore fruit. Either the release of resentful energy finally let the girl's body repair itself naturally, or the regular doses of strong yang energy helped it overcome its burden. But the empress looked fairly radiant, and, may I add, understandably smug. Just as I always said, this old fool could have saved me and poor Yen months of labor. I've been informed, in no uncertain terms by Phalio, for our little girl grew up and lost whatever reasonableness she had, that I'm to leave the happy couple to live in peace for at least 3 months, and not come over asking rude questions. And of course I would not let this stop my medical curiosity, but let's just say I expect to be called into the palace in 6 months or so. For now, I'm content to wait and watch. Our gamble paid off, dear father. And I hope the ghosts of Mei Ling are satisfied and will enjoy their well-earned rest. Affectionately yours, your ever filial son, Lin Chen. The end. If you've enjoyed the story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.